Turning your Bibles, please, to Matthew 5. I'm glad to be here. I'm not real big on the Mutual Admiration Society. I tell you how wonderful you are, and you tell me how wonderful I am. We're sinners saved by grace. Many of you have expressed your prayers and love for my granddaughter, Michaela. And the surgery was successful, but the doctors have not met with the family yet to tell exactly the extent of all they did. And, of course, we have to wait for pathology to come back to see what the tumor really is and all of that. But keep up your prayers. I'll let your pastor know when we know more, but we don't know more right now. And so that's just a very important thing on our hearts. My wife is there. Lori and I have been dating 57 years and married 53 years, and 49 of those were happy. Six kids and 22 grandkids and now four great-grandkids. I never wanted to be married to a great-grandmother, but we're here now, and so. But I wasn't saved until I was 18 years old. And I wasn't against God or the Bible, but nobody had really explained to me or showed me how I needed to be saved and how I could be saved. And it always comes back to my mind that there are many people who aren't against God, aren't against the Bible, aren't against being saved. They just need full and accurate information so they can be saved. And if you're here in a Baptist church on a Sunday morning, you're in a good place where you can hear the gospel and be saved. This week, we're talking about reaching the lost, and I have you turn to the Sermon on the Mount, and everybody familiar with, if you have a red letter Bible, you know this is all in red, and I want to get right to it. We don't want to be too late today. We want to beat the Methodist to the restaurant, and so actually, we're not going to beat anybody to the restaurant today, but there's a passage in Matthew 5, and we're going to read just four verses, and I'm going to apologize. We're going to look just at a few verses and try to look at one truth for the message. Please come back tonight if you can only come to one service. Tonight would be the one to come to. Oh, man, you guys caught that right away. But in the passage in Matthew chapter 5, let's get right to it. It says in verse 13, ye, what's that next word? Are. Let's say it with me. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, that wherewith shall it be salted? Is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden underfoot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I want you to note verses 13 and 14. It does not say, I would like you to be. It does not say, you should be. It says, ye are the salt of the earth. Salt is known to be a flavoring. Sometimes if you get a wound, it's an irritant. But salt is primarily known to be a preservative. When people say to me, Brother King, have you seen this country's going to hell in a handbasket? Hey, they've kicked out the Bible. They don't want prayer. They don't want nothing to do with God. And look at all of the Bible mores are being danced on, and they're just rejecting. Look, that's what you get when the salt loses its savor. When the church isn't what it ought to be, when the Christians aren't what they ought to be, that's what you get. It's thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden underfoot of men. Before we look at the culture and the government and everybody else, let's look in the mirror. Most important need of the hour is for people to be saved. someone's taught in the Bible, they will make right choices regarding governance and their family, things like that. And so I'm just challenging you. This is where the rubber really meets the road. You're the salt of the earth. If the salt's lost its savor, where shall it be salted? And so we have up here a barrel and we have salt. And this goes back, clear back in the year 2000, when everybody said, hey, Y2K, the grid is going down. We're not going to have electricity. They're going to declare martial law. You better build a bunker, get a generator, get extra food. And hey, whatever you do, be prepared to spend 6 months underground. Your survival, your life depends on it. And there was a guy who did a podcast, and he was right straight out of the 60s. They say if you can remember the 60s, you weren't really there. But he had long hair, and he had a tie-dyed shirt and bell-bottom pants. I'm sure he drove a Volkswagen tulip van. I mean, I know, orange shag carpet on the inside. I can just see it. But he was a survivalist, a prepper. And, hey, look, you've got to learn. You know, when they came over on the ships to this country, they learned they had to put some oranges in there because if you don't have vitamin C, you get scurvy. And hey, then they learned how to preserve meat. You have to have protein. And so they had barrels full of meat on the ship. And he went through and, hey, the Irish learned how to corn beef. That's just a salt brine. And the Jews corned beef and they soaked it. And the natives over here would make buffalo jerky and parched corn preserved. And all across the Pacific Rim, why, they'd get the fish and they would put salt on it and preserve it, and salt's a preservative. And then he goes through this thing of, if you're going to live in your bunker for 6 months, you're going to need some meat. And I want to show you how to survive, and your very life depends on this. And so he takes a barrel and he puts in a bag of rock salt, maybe 4 inches in the bottom, and he's hair on fire, serious, and he's, look, you got to put lots of salt in there. And then he had a table full of pork chops, and they were maybe 3/4 of an inch thick, and he laid them in there on the, and hey, make sure you don't overlap them, and make sure they don't come too close to the edge because they'll spoil, and if some of it starts to rot, the rest of it will rot, and you got to put, and boy, then he pours in more salt and another layer of pork chops, and then more salt and another layer, and he stops with a pregnant pause and looks at the camera, and he says, hey, you can't have too much salt, but you can have too much meat. And I thought, boy, that'd be a sermon right there. And he's putting in more and more. And boy, he gets about half full. And again, he looks at the camera and he says, now remember, in order for this to work, the salt has to actually touch the meat. And I thought, boy, oh boy, truer words were never spoken. Ye are the salt of the earth. If I make a barrel full of meat and I leave the salt over here, is this going to preserve that meat? David's going to help me. How about you tell me, is it going to work if we just take this salt? I tried to find somebody with biceps, but... and I put it right here. How's that going to do? No. That's not going to work? I know. I got an idea. Let's put it on top of the barrel. I don't know if it'll hold it. How about this? Is this good enough? You can maybe take this down so I don't bump it. Thank you. Give him a hand. Didn't he do a good job? I always get intimidated if there's a handsome guy up here, but I felt safe with David. So, I got to thinking, our people have kind of isolated themselves from the world so much so that we're having very little impact on our culture. I'm for separation. I'm for holiness, purity, and all of that. But let me tell you, the Bible, when it says, I wrote unto you not to company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or you'd have to go out of the world. If a brother's a fornicator, was such an one not to eat. But look, you've got to be around lost people. You have to touch the lives of lost people. I was in a church in Maine, and the pastor says to me, Brother King, we canceled Friend Day. After 15 years in a row of having Friend Day, I just canceled it this year because our people don't have friends. That is way too true. It's a horrible indictment that the salt is no longer touching the meat. Hey, I'm challenging you. Find a way. I've been my whole life, winners make a way and losers make an excuse. I'm challenging you. Find a way to touch the lost world around you. Find a way. I'm not talking about you joining the local tavern softball team and playing softball with a bunch of lost guys, and there's a keg of beer on second base, and everybody who hits a double has to drink beer before you can go to third. I'm not talking about that. But I wished I'd have had you in my hip pocket the last 12 years. About 25% of the churches I go to are growing. And about 50% are languishing. And about 25% are declining. So, could we go shopping at the churches that are growing and maybe learn a few things from them, right? Nothing's perfect. All they have is humans in their church. But, you know, you look around most churches and it's just Q-tips. Bald head, white hair, bald head, white hair, bald head, white hair. Sometimes I'm the youngest guy in the building. I was telling one guy, he wasn't bald, but he definitely had the cul-de-sac look going up there. But that church doesn't have a future if it doesn't have young families, if it doesn't have new kids, if it don't have new converts. The church is destined to just, hey, I talked to one deacon. He says, look, we haven't had a pastor in 3 years, and Mabel died and there wasn't a pastor, and Maud died and there wasn't a pastor. And three of our widow ladies came and said to me, just get anybody. We don't care if he's a Calvinist. We don't care what he believes. We don't care what Bible he uses. You know, we don't care what. Just get somebody here to do our funerals, to put us to bed with a shovel. The church is gone. Now, that's pretty pitiful. And so I'm on this crusade. Hey, let's get back to winning souls. Let's get back to seeing people saved. God will honor and bless and grow a church if you're really serious about reaching souls. Tonight, we're going to talk about prayer. But for today, I just want to tell you some stories. I just want you to go with me to a few churches. And just, what are churches doing that are actually growing, flourishing, happy? I'm in a church, and I was just thrilled. 12 young men came up and stood on the platform, college-age guys, and they sang gospel songs, two or three songs without songbooks, and sang like angels. And I said to the pastor, wow, most churches I go to would kill to have young men like that. I've been in churches where a man-eating lion got loose and starved to death. And I mean, you got all these young guys. Where'd they come from? He says, oh, pastor, it's ping pong. I go, what are you talking about? Well, you see the bass? No, who's the bass? The tall guy in the end, Paul. Well, what about him? Well, he's a soul winner. He had a burden for souls. and he's at our local university, and he wanted to find a way to reach people, and he was kind of the outlier, and so he went to the student union and asked if he could start a ping pong club on Thursdays from 6 until 8, and they said okay, and he signed up for the room, and they got a couple ping pong tables, and he put an ad in the student paper, and boy, anybody that wanted to play ping pong, and there's beginners and intermediates and professionals, and boy, he was praying to be a witness. And to start with, he just had a table with snacks. Sometimes chips and salsa, sometimes donuts and coffee, sometimes some, you know, potato chips and sour cream dip, but he just had a little snack there, and he filled out brackets, and hey, sign up, and bring your friends, and they played, and just 2 hours, and afterwards he'd say, I'll just hang out here if anybody wants to talk, and he said, every one of those men he's led to Christ at the university that he met playing ping pong. He didn't do it for ping pong's sake. After the fourth or fifth week, he had tracks on the table next to the snacks. After 6 or 7 weeks, he said, hey, look, we're going to kind of cut short the ping pong and have 30-minute Bible study at the end. After a while, it was, forget the ping pong, we just have a Bible study. Listen, find a way. Find a way. Good people that are serious about winning lost souls, find a way. I'm in another church, and there are, I'm not lying to you, 30 families with kids. And I said to the pastor, look at all these kids. You must have some kind of program going. He said, oh no, he said, it was Firefighter Sunday. And I said, Firefighter Sunday? Oh yeah. He said, we planned Firefighter Sunday. We had special Bibles printed with firefighter tribute in the front page, and we put up flyers in the restaurants and an ad in the paper, and we had big plans. We're going to teach all the kids in Sunday school to stop, drop, and roll and obey the firefighter. We had a dozen roses for every firefighter's wife that came. We told them if they wore their uniform, we'd give them a Bible, a real nice leather Bible. And we had it all planned. And any firefighter, we gave a Culver's ice cream gift certificate to all of them that came. He said it was, we planned and plotted and promoted. And he said, on Sunday, only one firefighter came in a uniform, and he was already a member of our church. And he asked if he could have all the Gulliver's gift cards. And he said it was so embarrassing. And so on Monday morning, we called the fire station where the chief's office was, and me and my assistant pastor went to the fire chief's office and sat across his desk and looked him eyeball to eyeball and slid a flyer across and told him, we had Firefighter Sunday. And we went to great expense. And none of you came. And we're here to apologize. Why would you come? You don't know us. We don't know you. A third of your force is working, so they can't go to church. The ones that are working the 24 on, 48 off, they value their time with their family. How presumptuous of us to think that you darken the doors of our church. But we've noticed that you paint the fire hydrants every 4 years. This quadrant of town this year, this quadrant the next year. And we want to take that job away from you. Our teenagers will wire brush off the fire hydrants and clean up the mess. You tell us yellow, orange, red, or lime green, whatever you want. You give us the paint. Our teenagers will paint the fire hydrants. Our girls will put puppy dog noses on the nozzle where you put the hose. He said the next year, 18 firefighters came to Firefighter Sunday. Why? Because the salt has to actually touch the meat. Now they do know who they are. Now they do know what the church is about. Now they do know. Nobody said, Pastor, you got to get a different Bible. Nobody said, Pastor, why don't we get a drum set and electric guitars? Nobody said, hey, Pastor, you got to get this dancing girls up here doing the, what, no, the, nothing like 70-year-old women in spandex doing choreographed. I've seen it all. Trying to get it out of my mind. Hear me. They reach those young families. The firefighters are all relatively young, healthy guys. And they got a wife and kids. And now they know who the church is. I'm in another church, and I say to the pastor, look at all these kids. You got these monkeys running around here, all these junior high age kids. And I said, how in the world? I said, you must have some kind of tremendous youth pastor. And he says, no, to tell you the truth, Pastor King, our youth pastor is kind of a lunk, and I'm thinking of firing him. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, oh, yeah. He said, he does nothing. He says, you see those two ladies in the second row on the left side? And I look over there and, yeah. Now, you ladies know this is true. There are some women who are just elegant. Their bearing, their carriage, their hair, their dress. These were somewhere near the other end of the spectrum. Plain as a mud fence. And I'm, yeah, what about them? He says, those two, they're responsible for nearly every one of these young families. Well, now they look a lot prettier to me. How beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel and bring glad tidings. He says, yeah, both of them are widows, and they're retired school teachers. And boy, we live in this wealthy community, and it's all these million-dollar houses, and the metro, the women are all working to support this house, and they got little kids, and here the SUVs go by every morning, and they got toothpicks under their eyelids and a Starbucks in their hand and three screaming kids in back, and they're taking the kids to school, and then they got to go work for a living. And these ladies said, boy, we feel bad for those. Our husbands are gone. We're on our teacher's pension. But the kids that get out of school, mom's still at work until 4 or 4:30 or 5, and the kids get out at 2:55. And boy, the latchkey kids, they old enough to go junior high and high school, they can go back to their house. But these younger kids, they get warehoused at the local Salvation Army gym. The buses take these kids, 100 kids, and they take them over to the Salvation Army, and they have after-school care until dad or mom gets off work. And these two ladies came to me and said, Pastor, what a miserable life that must be for them poor women. They work all day long, and then they come pick up their monsters and take them home, and they got to feed them supper, and then they got to help them with the schoolwork, and then they got to put them to bed and get up again the next day at 6 and start the whole thing over again. Why don't we help them? And so they went to Salvation Army, and the woman says, I'll do math and science. You do English and history. And, hey, if you're going to get picked up at 4, we'll help you with your homework first. And if you're getting picked up at 4:30, we'll help you with your homework. We want you to have your homework done so mom can enjoy an evening at home with you. And here they are, certified teachers. Well, they're not preaching. They're not spanking. They're just serving. They're just helping those little kids. The pastor said, when I go knocking doors, or the youth pastor goes knocking doors on Saturday morning, and we're there, the parents think we're Chester the molester. But when those two ladies knock on the door, the kids run out from behind mom in her robe and say, this is the lady that helps me with my math. This is the lady, he said, they've won more people to Christ. They've brought more visitors to church than everybody else in the church combined because they love what those parents love. They found a way to serve those kids. I'm in another church. The pastor says, "Hey, Brother King, see that lady in the wheelchair?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, let me tell you about her. She's a soul winner." And I announced we're having Saturday soul winning. And she came teary-eyed. "Brother, I can't go soul winning. I'm in the wheelchair. I'm confined. And especially if it's icy out or anything. And I'm praying, God, show me how I could win somebody to Christ." And so the pastor says, "Hey, I'm sorry, but I'm sure God understands. You can stay home and pray. That's fine." But that lady wasn't content to do that, and she took an ad out in the local Shopper. "If you want to learn how to do needlework, if you come to my house at Tuesday at 6 o'clock in the evening, I got room for 3 women, and I'll teach you how to do knitting and darning and needlework, and I'll show you how to do all the things." And so he says, look at in her row. There's 4 women. She's led every one of them to Christ. Now, just this is aside. Take it off the tape. But I personally believe anybody that can take 2 metal needles and a skein of yarn and go, and out comes a sweater, that's demonic. That's where the golden calf came from. I'm positive. But that lady, it wasn't about the knitting. You understand what I'm saying? It wasn't her being in a compromising situation. She's in a situation where she's in charge. I know a church where there's a guy that had a burden to win souls, and he started this down in Florida, Fort Myers, and they have a cruise in, and they have a classic car, Christian classic car club, cruise in, hot dogs, and they have soul winners go around and witness the guys. They've had 4 families join the church from the Christian cruise in. People find a way. They find a way. Nobody said, "Pastor, I want you to tell me what to do. Just give me the marching orders. I'll do whatever you say." Like pushing a rope uphill. Churches are growing because the congregation takes the initiative to win lost souls. They're empowered, they're encouraged, and they win lost. I'm in another church, and the pastor says, "Brother King, look at all these kids." "Yeah," I said, "I see that." He says, we've had 50 people join our church in the last year. And he says, "It's all because of the orange T-shirts." And I'm looking out there, and there's nobody in an orange T-shirt. And I said, "What's going on?" "Well, I'll tell you, Michelle Obama put broccoli in the vending machines, and the kids are rebelling against all the health food they got. And so they're throwing food back at the cooks in the lunchroom. They're throwing food on the floor. We've had cooks quit. We've had janitors quit. And the principal of the junior high puts a thing in the paper, 'Hey, we're looking to hire more people, and we don't know what to do. We got these kids.'" And one of the ladies in the church said, "Hey, I feel bad for those janitors. I feel bad. This shouldn't be. Those kids shouldn't be running the cafeteria. That shouldn't be like that." So she got 4 ladies for the 11:30 hour and 4 for the 12:15 lunch period. And she got orange T-shirts. And here's a trick. She had printed on there, "Lunchroom monitor." Ooh. Tricky. And said to the principal, "Hey, we'd be happy to just circulate among the kids and help them with the food tray and quell the violence. And when there's an adult present, maybe the kids will behave better." And these 4 ladies, they're not preaching. They're in the public school. They're in the lunchroom at the junior high. They're walking around. "Hey, Tanya, can I take your tray to the wash station? Hey, Bobby, do you want another chocolate milk? Hey, Susie, is that your brother over there?" But now they know their names. They're just chatting. "Where do you live? What does your daddy do? What does your mommy do? How many sisters do you have?" Hey, they're not preaching. They're not getting kicked out. At the end of the school year, the pastor said, you know what? He said, the people in the lunch service area, the janitors, the principal announced an all-school assembly. They had the superintendent of schools. They had the entire school board. And they brought those 8 women in. And they gave them a gift card. And they thanked them. And the kids gave them a standing ovation. But he said, guess who knows everybody in the neighborhood? Guess who's inviting families? Guess, he said, remember, the salt has to touch the meat in order for this to work. The salt. There's a guy in Pennsylvania I'm with in that church, and he's a gunsmith. He's a gunsmith. And well, he put an ad, Thursdays, I'll teach you gun. I know how to do adjust your trigger pull. We can custom make a stock with a cheek rest. We can do the gun cleaning, show you how to, and everything from bluing the barrel to I'll do all of this. But he's sitting there with 2 men that he's led to Christ because you had him to his house ostensibly to learn gunsmithing. I'm in another church, and I could do this all day long. But it's so encouraging to see nobody standing around twiddling their thumbs waiting for the pastor to come up with all the good ideas. Nobody's waiting for the church to start another program. Nobody's saying, boy, I wished our pastor was more well-spoken. Boy, our pastor is dry as cracker juice. Our pastor, he's boring. No, nobody's talking like that. They're not waiting. They're not saying, I sure wished our church would hire the next blue chip staff member. If we could just hire our own priest. Micah did it. Why don't we just hire a guy? If we could, he can do it. Boy, we're going to let him go to town. That's not what's happening. That's not how churches are growing. Look, you can never hire somebody to do what God wants you to do. You're the salt of the earth. I'm in a church, and so many things flood my memory. There's this church full of young families, and I said to the pastor, wow, you got something going here. What are you doing? Whoa. He says, take a look at that gal near the back row. The blonde's 2 in from the edge. And I look, and on a scale of 1 to 10, she's a 12. She's strikingly beautiful. Mid-30s. I said, wow, what about he? He says, you see these people here? He said, nearly every new family for the last 2 years has come because of her witness. I said, well, what does she do? Huh. He says, her husband is a multi-godzillionaire, and they have property out in the country, and it's completely fenced, and they have a gatehouse, and they pay a guy full time to be in the gatehouse. And boy, he said, she has no need to work. If I had their money, I'd throw mine away. But she has a Rolls Royce in the garage. She has a Mercedes convertible for her grocery getter. And she's behind these walls, behind these fences. But she got burdened that she's not a soul winner. She doesn't have any contact with lost people. She doesn't know any lost people. And she went down to the local bus company and signed up to drive public school bus. She doesn't need the money. She gives every penny they pay her and gives that to missions. And he said, these families, she went and got her CDL. She drives a public school bus. She picks up all these kids. And then in the summertime, she drives her same route and picks up the kids and brings them to Vacation Bible School. Recruits kids to go to youth camp. She's cultivated a relationship with all their mothers, and she's the greatest soul winner in our church. And I'm saying, I want to talk to her. So I talk to her. I say, hey, the pastor says you're driving. Oh, yeah, she says, I'm the worst school bus driver in the world. I've never been in the front of one of those cracker boxes. I've wiped out a dozen mailboxes. They've had to tow me out of the ditch time after time. Everybody at the bus company laughs at me. The kids think it's hysterical. Let me tell you something. None of these ideas came from the pastor. After you see it for a while, if you were with me, if you were in my hip pocket, if you traveled where I went, you'd see churches all around are growing and flourishing and growing, some by 10, some by 20, some by 50. But it's not, they're not all sitting around wishing something was different. They're doing something. They're asking God, show me what could I honorably do. I was talking this sermon in a church, and the lady came to me and she said, Pastor King, I don't know how to knit, so I don't know what I could do. I said, I don't care. I don't care. Go to Hawaii and teach them how to snowshoe. I don't care. Find a way. Find a way. The Bible says if the salt loses its savor, it's good for nothing. Look, if you're not going to reach lost souls, God may as well knock you in the head and take you to heaven now. You're here for a purpose, supporting missions, reaching the lost world, serving one another, bearing one another's burdens. There's a lot in this. But here's what I believe, and I'm done. I'm just telling you. Here's what it says. Ye are the salt of the earth. I don't want anybody to go out this door. We're going to hand you a little packet of salt on the way out today to remind you, you are the salt of the earth. But right next to it's going to be a pack of gospel tracts. This isn't the pastor's job. It's not a staff member's job. It's not somebody else's job. It's you, your circle of friends. Listen, if it was up to me, everybody in Corpus Christi would go to hell because I'm not here. No, you're not doing much for Amro, Wisconsin. It's you and your circle of influence, the friends you know, your co-workers, the people you encounter every day. We're going to talk about this week in different ideas, but I'm asking you just in this service, could you ask God to put in your heart and mind a way you could reach lost people, that you could touch the lost people? I'm not talking about compromise. I'm not talking about being like them. I'm not talking about trimming the message. I'm not talking about changing the gospel. I'm talking about, look, I need David back up here and I'm done, but even the worst of us can be used for a bad example. Look, you can't just walk up to somebody and slap them. Smart people back up. Right? The trick is you got to put your arm around them and then slap them with the other hand. Thank you. Listen to me. You earn the right to say hard things to people. If you're going to say your religion won't get you to heaven, if you're going to say you're in jeopardy of hell, you earn the right to say hard things. But when somebody honestly believes you have their best interests at heart, you can say hard things to them and they'll take it. Just get to know them. Just get to know them. I'm just challenging you. Imagine for me how invigorating it is to go to place after place and see them happy and people come up to me the next year when I go back, Pastor King, I want you to meet the meat. I was the salt, and this is my meat, and this is the meat that... I'm serious. It happens all over this country. Because why? Because they got down deep in their heart, God could use me to reach a lost soul. And it'll be different for you than for them. And hey, I lied about the knitting. I don't think that's demonic, but I'm saying, what a joy to watch Christians with a smile of heaven on their face. Here's somebody I was burdened for. I prayed for and I talked to, and they got saved. I'd like heads bowed and eyes closed. Ye are the salt of the earth. Remember, in order for this to work, the salt has to actually touch the meat. In order for this to work, you actually have to touch lives somehow, some way. I wonder who would say today, Pastor King, I know I'm around, whether it be in the grocery store or at work or in my day-to-day, I know people that are lost. I'm not completely isolated. There are people that need the gospel. And I want God to use me to help them to be saved. Would you just slip your hand up? I know lost people. I'm asking God to help me to somehow get the gospel to them. God bless you. Wow, hands all over the house. Thank you so much. My second challenge is to you this way. Would you ask God to show you how he could enable you to actually touch lost people's lives? Lord, whether it be at the nursing home or the jail or the gun club, whether it be at the local garage or the Greasy Spoon restaurant, or Lord, would you show me what I could do? Maybe I'm not a school teacher. Maybe I'm not a bus driver. Maybe I'm not a gunsmith. Maybe I'm not a ping pong player. But God, would you show me what I could honorably do to touch a life, to open a door of witness? I'm asking God, would you show me what I could do? Could you pray a prayer like that between you and God and mean it with all your heart? Heads bowed, eyes closed, but would you say with the uplifted hand, I could pray a prayer like that and mean it. God, show me how I could touch the meat, how I could actually touch a life. Lord, show me, open my eyes, give me direction, help me to touch lives so I could get them the gospel. Heavenly Father, you've seen the hands, you know the hearts. In order for this to work, the salt has to actually touch the meat. Our strength is in our purity. But Lord, help us to not get so isolated, so away, so afraid that we forget we're here to reach a lost and dying world. These are good folks. They're in a good church. But Lord, I pray you'd hear their prayer. Give them clear direction. Give them some ideas. Give them some encouragement. Give them some boldness. Lord, I pray that this church would be the enabling, encouraging side of it, to stand alongside them, to bear them up in prayer, to be sure to be gospel-oriented as they bring a visitor, so that souls would be saved and Christ would be glorified. Bless our invitation time, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you stand with me, please? And the song leader's going to lead in the song as the pianist plays. But
102.
Maybe 202. You'd like to just find a place at the altar and just ask God, give me clear direction. Maybe you already have an idea. Maybe you have a person that you're burdened for, and you'd like to galvanize that choice today as he sings.